Welcome to the Events Innovator Show, where we explore the ideas and strategies that are transforming events. Get ready to unlock the secrets to creating extraordinary experiences. And now, here's your host, Phil Michon.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Event Innovator Show. I am back. I'm Phil Michon, and I'm excited for another interview with an event legend, Liz Caruso. Liz is the CEO of TexiTalk. She loves to sing, and she loves Korean food. Welcome to the show, Liz.
That is me in one line. Thank you.
One line. Well, you haven't always been in events. So when did you get started? Go as early as you want.
So when I graduated college, I thought I wanted to do counseling, like family counseling. So I worked in a counseling center and very quickly realized it's not my thing. And so I moved into just kind of a admin job just to figure out, now what am I going to do now that I wasted all this money on an education I'm not going to use? And happened to be on the planning team as an admin for Columbia University, which I didn't know event planning was a job at that point. I was just kind of printing name tags. And then I was like, what are these people doing over here? And, you know, I think how people typically stumble into something that they love, I have always been doing events, always coming up with crazy ideas and planning them, but never thought you could make money doing it. So like, wait a minute, what are those people doing? I want to do that. So I kind of told my boss and I worked my way up to planning there. And then typical fast moving Liz, I was like, I want to do something else now. And so I created a Twitter account, which led to starting my company because people started just asking me, you know, granted, this was back in 2009 when Twitter was really becoming popular. And so people would say like, hey, can you plan my event? And I would be like, oh, no, it's not a company. It's just me. And I would refer them out until I realized maybe there's something here. So I went out on my own in 2013. And it's been a really fun time ever since then.
Wild journey. And we could probably go a lot of different directions. But I actually think you may, I don't know if you've realized this or have thought about it, but your counseling background may be what makes you good at something that not every event planner is good at. And that is, you're good at fleshing out what a client really needs so that you can execute on their vision. So, and I know you've got lots of clients by now. 2013 is a long time ago. And one of the things I know about some of your clients is they have a lot of ideas, but they're going too fast to figure out how to even make them happen. And that's why they bring you in, is to corral them and to draw them in. So that's probably not something that you were doing at the beginning. So how did that become an area where you realize that you could specialize and make yourself different from other event organizers out there?
I think it's just who I am naturally. I am a person who thinks outside the box, and that's been something that carries me all throughout my life. For a long time, I used to say, I'm just really lazy. And then people coached me that you should really just talk about efficiency. But I would like to find the best way to do anything. And I don't like to do anything because it's supposed to be done that way or because everyone does it that way. And that's just how I am wired. That's just how I think. So I like homeschool my kids. I do not do well in a 9-to-5 office environment. It's just all of that is like, we could do it so much faster. We could do it so much better. You know, it's like my brain is always working that way. And so I work really well with entrepreneurs and thought leaders and speakers and authors because, like you said, they're flying a million miles an hour doing what they do really well. And they don't necessarily, they know they need events. They know they need to build an audience, but they know that, you know, doing it the long way of tons of content and freebies and leading to, it just takes forever and it doesn't always work. So I think that's just, it's just kind of like the natural thing about who I am is that when you work with us and you work with another company, we're always, you know, trying to cut the budgets down and really only spend on what really matters as if our clients' budgets were my own money. We're trying to think of the fastest way. Like I had a client come to me last year and say, we want to do an event and this is what we want it to look like. And we really got them to start doing virtual pieces first and leading to hybrid and leading to the in-person because it's a lot less risk. And I think that's a lot of things, a lot of other planners would say, great, let's do the in-person event. And they would jump in and spend all this client's money. only to find out that maybe that client doesn't have the right audience, or it's going to take more time to get that. So I think it's just that like outside of the box thinking that helps us serve our clients better. And we find that that more like entrepreneurial audience is what is looking for my weird thinking.
Well, and I know you're not just a planner. You also have a marketer's mindset. So you know how to help client get the right people to the event. Like you helped me with an event and you helped me with the back end stuff on all the marketing materials and getting the website geared up for it. It wasn't just about how do we make the event day of happen. Let's back up. You're working with one of these authors or one of these entrepreneurs. What are some of the questions that you're asking when you first meet with them that help set you up for the way that you uniquely go about producing an event?
Well, I think goals, like every event planner should be asking, what are you trying to achieve? But really trying to dig into that, because a lot of times people say more money or I need a bigger audience, but they haven't really quantified what that looks like. And they don't, I find 8 out of 10 times, they don't even know where they're at. So if you say you want to make X more, well, how much are you really making from your book sales today? Let me get back to you. I got to figure that out. Or how big is your audience? Well, I have like this much on my newsletter and I have this many on social. But how many of those people are really engaged with you? How many of them love you to the point of buying something? I'm not really sure, you know? So we try to dig into the goals kind of at that level. The other piece is understanding like the very long-term relationship that they want to have with their audience. Some people don't necessarily, like I'm a big community person. I really believe that we're better when we're connected to each other. So those are kind of the best clients for us. So that's one of the first pieces I try to figure out, because a lot of people are just trying to make money from an audience. And I don't do as well with that. You know? I do better working with clients who are really trying to nurture a community. They want people to get benefit from each other as much as they're getting from whoever this leader is that I'm talking to. And they're very passionate about nurturing that community. And so figuring out like what that will look like and the benefits that the leader will get over time, that's something that we dig into pretty quickly. Budget is always, you know, everyone says, we're not sure what our budget is. And then you say, well, this is how much it costs to hold an event. And they say, well, that's out of our budget. You're like, wait a minute, I thought we didn't have a budget. But everyone has some mindset about what things cost, you know, even if they don't have, you know, a bank account with X dollars in it for this event, they know what they think it's going to cost. They know what they would feel like, that's stretching me. And this is not, you know, so really trying to dig into budget. But the other thing we're seeing is that a lot of clients assume things will be so expensive and they don't really understand how to match that with the revenue side of things. So we right. often help them early on with like sponsorship packages and ticket sales strategies and pricing, because, you know, if you just look at the investment and you're not seeing what it could take, you know, what it would look like to bring the money in on the other side, then it's a lot scarier. So we spend a lot of our time kind of talking those strategy things really early on.
And this is one of the things I think about, I don't know if you do, is what's the upside, not just for the event. So there's the revenue and the profit from the event, but what other benefits are there and how is that helping your business? Do you help think that through too, so that you're setting the event up to be an engine for the company?
Exactly. It can't just be an event. It has to tie into something. So whether it's that community, whether it's the long-term brand engagement, whether it's the awareness, like just you doing something is getting you out there. So really trying to understand. And, you know, of course, we always want to think not just one event, but how are we using events over time as part of an overall strategy to make that connection with your audience and to then eventually, you know, that's the other piece is everyone thinks I'm going to do an event, then I'm going to sell all these books or I'm going to sell all these programs and then I'll be set. It's like, that's not how events typically work. And if it does, it usually has a tail that goes downhill after that, because people are like, okay, well, I got that. And I don't really want to go spend all my money again with that person, you know, right. Really trying to get people to think about the uphill investment. And again, doing it sometimes smaller investments up front to kind of build that momentum to get them to the point where it's achieving for them what they see today is their goal, kind of understanding that that's not going to happen necessarily on your first event every time.
So I was working with a client recently who wanted to do an event, but I realized that they didn't really want to tap into their email. And so they didn't really have a big audience. And, you know, and I didn't realize this when I first started working with them, but I probably would have said, you know what, you should wait. You should wait a year before you do an event because you need to build the appetite up for this event that you want to create. And that leads me to this question. Do you ever have clients who either one, you realize I'm not going to work with you because this isn't going to happen, or two, you advise them events aren't for you right now. You need to get X, Y, and Z in place before you're ready. I'm happy to help you get to that point. And I know you talked about the virtual to hybrid to in person being one way to get there. But do you ever basically say, no, I'm not going to work with you because this is unrealistic?
Yeah, it happens all the time because I work with entrepreneurs. So most entrepreneurs are like ready to launch something and they assume events are the best way to get it out there. But like you said, they don't have an audience yet and they're going to end up spending way too much money and not getting the return. And when I first started in business, I remember feeling like, gosh, it's going to suck to tell them that we shouldn't do an event because they're basically coming and saying they want to do an event and that's revenue for me and that's great. But what I realized is it was actually better to tell people no, to say like, it's not the right time, because we've had clients come back years later, and sometimes it is years, and that's a little bit painful to watch, but yeah, sometimes it's years later, and then they've got the budget and the audience, and it's so much more fun to work with them, and it obviously achieves more of the goal. So we do it, yeah, unfortunately, all the time where we say that, or we've had plenty of times where we say to a client, we think this is where you should go. This just happened to us recently. We're like, we worked a year and a half of creating a concept with this particular. So it was an existing client. And we were like, I think there's something over here. We should do this other event. And we worked with their team to dream it up. And then we decided to test it. And long story short, it wasn't getting enough interest. So we ended up not being able to do it. And it was really disappointing. We kind of worked for free for quite a while, but you know, not hours and hours, just concept dreaming. But I still think that's a very viable event. Now we can think about, is there another brand that might be more ready for it? Or is this something that they could do some other stuff to build towards, which I think is what they want to do, so that we can do that event maybe next year, the year after. So I guess the creative part of me doesn't mind that, but the business side sometimes is like, well, it stinks, but I feel like it's the right thing to do for everyone involved.
Well, it's long-term thinking. Because you don't want to take those short-term gains. They lose money.
Yeah.
They don't like you anymore. They give you a bad reputation because they had a bad experience. That's not going to help you, even though it would have fed your family for, you know, a couple months or whatever it might have been.
Yeah.
So I think that's really smart thinking. Same kinds of questions. So you're fleshing out this vision. You're getting the strategy in place. You know where they want to go. And let's say they've got this shiny object that they really want. They want to bring in Seth Godin. Let's just say, and I don't know what his fees are, but let's just say it's $50,000.
Yeah.
It could be a lot more than that. I don't know. Probably depends on the event. But they really want Seth. But you know what their goals are. How do you tell them, I don't think that's the strategy that's going to get you to those goals?
So, I mean, as you know, this is a hard conversation because at the end of the day, it's their budget, their event, you know, so we do often kind of talk them through what it's going to cost, what, you know, obviously the first kind of step is to look at budget and to think about what they want and what's coming in and whether this is going to reach their goals from a revenue standpoint if they do these things. So that's obviously the first kind of place we start. We usually would recommend some type of focus group or something with their audience so that they can get kind of short-term feedback on whether this is something that really matters to their audience. Because a lot of times it matters to them, but their audience really doesn't care, you know? And so once they hear that, they're like, wait, I'm going to drop $50,000 on a speaker that no one even cares about or whatever the fancy thing is. So sometimes that helps, but it does kill me a little bit because sometimes we do lots of recommending and they say, yeah, we still want to do that. And then, you know, you have to kind of obviously execute it. And then nine times out of 10 at the end, they're saying that the event wasn't as successful or it didn't achieve as much revenue. And you're kind of like, hey, remember that thing we told you you shouldn't spend money on, which of course you can't really do professionally. So yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, unfortunately it's their call, but we do definitely try to advise away from, you know, whenever we feel like it's not a good fit.
So conversely, how do you help them see the things that are really going to drive the results that they want? Because that's, you know, it's easy to say, I'm just going to execute on the vision of this person, but you're really trying to help them accomplish something that's bigger than the event. So how do you help them identify those levers that you know will get them there that, you know, may not be sexy to them, or they just don't understand why that's important because they've never thought about that before?
Yeah, I feel sometimes like we're in politics. I feel like we're trying to find, okay, what's the right messaging? What's the right, you know, who's the right person to bring this to? You know, a lot of times we'll say, here's something that we think should happen. And I can tell that the person we're talking to is kind of like, yeah, I'm not doing that. And you're thinking, but this is going to help you achieve, you know? So we do some back end, you know, obviously not going around our client's head, but, you know, involving in the next meeting, someone that we think might be more receptive to it, or trying to understand. So sometimes we'll, like, I just had a call a few weeks ago with someone where we have kind of shared experience with this client. And so I'm saying, here's what we think they should be doing, but they're not really picking up on it. What do you think is the reason why? And we kind of got this outsider perspective, and she was able to help me see a side that it was like an issue I totally never thought of that's really unrelated to events, but it was more an internal, like how they work and who's talking to who and who's making it. And it clarified. So then I was able to go back and use the right words, words that made that person feel like we were, and suddenly they're more interested, you know? So sometimes I feel like it's a little bit of a politics game, just kind of figuring out how to get them to open up to it. The other piece is, I think, figuring out, because a lot of times there are things they could be doing that are like low hanging fruit, doesn't cost any more money. They're already paying for these tools or these people, but they assume that it would cost a lot more money. So again, sometimes coming from the budget angle of like, hey, we're already paying, you know, let's say virtual chat moderators this much money. If we engage them in this way, you could really up your engagement without paying any more money. And the return could look like this, you know, so focusing on that kind of stuff. And then having, you know, how people talk about offering like the two or three tiers. So here's the free stuff we should be doing. And we could also add this little extra thing over here. And that's really what we're trying to get them to do. But focusing on the fact that they could be doing more with the investment they're already making.
Can you give me a story without names of how you walk someone through this process?
Yeah. So I kind of started talking about it, but so we have a client multi-year. Every year they do a hybrid event. Their in-person event is wildly popular, sells out every year and is invite only, and people can apply, but get turned away all the time. And okay. So they do a hybrid
nice problem,
event.
By the way.
Great problem to have. Yeah, very rare problem. So every year we do virtual, but all they do is hire chat moderators who choose, and they stream like select sessions. And the chat moderators are only approved to say, hello, welcome to the event. Here's our code of conduct. And then at the end to put the survey link in. So they're sitting there and being paid for a very long period of time. They're not allowed to like anyone's comment. So then every year this client was complaining about lack of engagement and lower numbers than the year before. And I'm like, because we're not doing anything for these people. So I had to go to another vendor for the same client and kind of understand what that person was experiencing from this client and who to talk to. Because I could just tell, like, I would give the ideas every year. Here's what we should do. And whoever I was talking to would say, that's really smart. And yes, that would help our engagement. And then they would come back like 8 weeks later and say, we've decided not to do any of that. And I kept being like, who is deciding? Like, who is the person that I'm not talking to? So I kind of got a little more insight, started talking to a few different people, and finally kind of got the ear of the right person, the one who's actually saying we need more engagement and sees the need. And knows the other person who needs the approval. And so we were able to kind of go through that process. And so I'm hoping this next year will be the first year, because now we finally like got to the right person. And so that's an example of something that you're already spending money on, We just really want to see you be more successful. Now, the second level of that is that you're turning people away every year. So I have lots of other ideas like charging for virtual attendance for certain people. The idea that you could restream sessions at different time zones, because the time zones for, it's not a US event. The majority of their audience is US and it's super early in the morning for them. So I'm like, no wonder you don't US people. So that would cost a little bit more because you'd have to hire your chat moderators for, you know, different times, but you're not streaming content again. You're just like repurposing content. But you kind of have to get in the door with like, let's just make the most of the budget we're already spending. And that, so sometimes this is like a 5-6 year thing. It's crazy just to get in the door, get the change you want to see.
Well, I love your thinking about how can we get more from what we're already spending. And then the flip side is, do you really need to spend money on that? Maybe it should be something else. But then you're also saying, make sure you understand the language that's going to resonate with a client. But also, are you talking to the right person? Because maybe it's not the person with the influence or the purse strings, so to speak. So I think I like that a lot. You said you're an out-of-the-box thinker. So how do you help a client think outside of their box when these are already entrepreneurs who are probably pretty creative?
Yeah, so we try to start that process from the proposal. I try to keep the intake less about what they want their event to look like and more about the goals, the budget, the timeline, the audience, that type of thing, and include in our proposal what we would recommend that they do as compared to they give us the event and we just quote them for what that would look like. I think that also makes us competitive against other planners because we often will come in again with like a 2 or 3 event strategy that starts with a lower investment and lets them test whether this is going to work for them. And so we're kind of like starting the process with our ideas to help them think a little bit differently about what they want to achieve. So I feel like that sets the ground really well. And then thankfully, I think the brand has been kind of built online over the years. And I think, I hope that people come to us for the fresh ideas. They realize when they're working with TexiTalk, we're not just going to execute your typical event. We can do that, but we're, you know, it's almost like, it's hard to hold it in when you're like, why are you spending all this money? We often are helping them rethink not just how much money they're spending, but what are they really trying to achieve? And does an event even really do that? I mean, events are changing so dramatically. And so I feel like that's the benefit that we're bringing to them from the very first call that they have with us and like all the way back at the proposal state.
I think you have to be willing to say events aren't the best way to accomplish the goal, or at least not the way that you're doing it. It seems to me one of the ways that as leaders, we can help a client is to provide them options. So there's not just one way to solve the thing that they want, but here's like 3 different ways that we could do this. Maybe it's a cheap, middle, and expensive way, or maybe there's 3 creative alternatives, which one resonates so that they're not just rejecting your one idea. But instead, you're coming to them and saying, this is the problem we're trying to solve. Is that the problem that you see we have?
Exactly.
Here's some ways that we could do that. Now they feel some ownership because they got to choose or say, I like option 2, but can we do this, this, and this? And you say, well,
exactly.
Your budget needs to go up. but if we did this, we could keep the budget the same, right? Is that kind of how the conversation would go?
Absolutely. And I think it also helps to identify what really matters when you give them a few different options. You start to see their eyes light up about this one piece of something that they didn't really say much about and not really something about something else. Because again, when they're thinking inside the box, they're kind of saying what they've seen done or what they've done in the past, but they're not necessarily in love with all of that. So by giving them a few different options and talking them through it, you're able to kind of see which parts they really care about and which parts are just kind of there. And they're just fluff. And then we can more kind of in that conversation, help them navigate through how do we get rid of all the stuff you don't care about that's not really going to yield the results? I mean, obviously, sometimes some of that isn't needing to happen, but usually not most of it. and I think asking clients about what their experience is at events, what events they go to, what you know, are you staying for all the content? Are you mostly hanging out for the networking? You know, what are you doing when you attend conferences and events? So we mostly do conferences. Really helps us then in the proposal meeting to talk them through that idea of like, as you know, and you have experienced yourself, like most people are not going to sit through just content session after content session. So here are some creative ideas, you know, so that's something that I find, especially post-COVID, everyone, their purpose for attending events is so different, but this has been going on even longer. You know, content is everywhere. Networking is everywhere. So we're trying to get to them from that early stage to say, so then what's the point of the event? What could we do that's more than just content and networking? Those two things that event planners can't seem to get past.
Well, I saw someone say this, and I resonate with it, that information is everywhere. So we have to be about transformation. And I think community is another thing. People are willing to travel because they want to meet people that they don't know or deepen relationships they already have. And they're looking for transformation, some kind of change, something that's going to help them see the world differently. Like AI is moving so fast. How should I be thinking about AI? It's not how do I use ChatGPT because that's going to change tomorrow. But how should my business be embracing AI, or should I really be afraid of it? That's a conversation worth having outside of your business, because then you can come back with a renewed strategy and thought process. So if that's true, let's focus on the transformation thing. How do you set events up for transformation as opposed to information?
So some of the big things that we're kind of fans of, and not all of our clients love these ideas, but this is what I think helps those things. One, we try to eliminate or greatly reduce the need for AV. So smaller events. Less, you know, stage and speaker type setups, and more roundtable, intimate retreat type setups where they're interacting with each other more. It also greatly reduces the cost. But the idea of someone presenting with slides, if they could see those slides on a device on their iPad, and otherwise they're just kind of interacting with the speaker and the content, we find that that just is like a disconnection. It's like pulling apart the power cord, literally, but it allows people to kind of connect in a different way because they're not just expecting to sit there. Another thing is changing the venue altogether. So one of my big ideas is to have more sessions that are, so like, let's say you have several different sessions, concurrent sessions at the same time. And one might be taking a hike with speaker A talking about AI. The next session option might be sitting in an air-conditioned room, doing a cooking class with X speaker, doing so more experiential, more options for people to kind of do something that feels comfortable to them. Because I think a lot of people want more. We've seen over the years, like more yoga, more walking, more, and not everybody loves that. So then you have half your attendees complaining. So letting them opt into like the content that they want, the experiences they want, giving them the option to make more of a relationship with people, not only the other speakers, but the other attendees too. So a lot of like breakouts, opportunities for just hanging out without any set, you know, I'm not really even a fan of like the networking receptions where you're just cocktail and it's like awkward, you know, but maybe some evening activities where you can, again, choose something that would be really fun for you. And you're just with other attendees hanging out, and there's just a leader kind of making sure you know where to go and what to do. So I think a lot of that where you're just kind of like, you know, completely disconnecting them from what they would be expecting and creating the space for them to have that transformation. I think for transformation to happen, there has to be, yes, some good inspirational aha content. There has to be time for reflection. And I think there even has to be time and guided activity through the implementation of that. Because we all know after the conference is over, we go back to our office, we get swamped by all the catch up and all the thing. And I have stacks of stuff I've never done anything with. So things like accountability groups that carry on after the conference, where you're saying like, this session was super impactful. And now every week for the next 6 weeks, we're going to meet once a week on Zoom and really unpack and implement this into what we're doing, gives people that time to have the transformational moment.
Yeah, you've got to have, I think, preparation and follow-up. The event can be a pivot moment. It can be a paradigm shift. Yeah. It can teach you a new skill. But unless you apply it, it's really not doing all that much good. And it could be even worse than that. It could be inoculation where you don't think you need change at all.
Exactly.
You said something interesting. So you said there's conversational learning, like setting up round tables where you're having conversations and even taking away the slide so that the speaker is now actually having a conversation with the audience and not, you know, trying to do some kind of lecture. But then the experiential, you made me think about, you know, the analogy in my book is baking. And I can totally see you bring in a baker and lead groups of people through an exercise of saying, we're going to bake loaves of bread for four different kinds of people. And I'm going to set you up in four different teams and give you that profile of person. And we're going to lead you through a process of thinking about how you're going to combine these ingredients. And then afterwards, you can debrief it and say, you know, this is exactly what it's like of serving clients and understanding what they need and trying to match their taste profile, so to speak, and knowing what the things that you have to offer and how you combine them. It would be much more powerful learning than just teaching people how to look at an avatar and develop a marketing plan.
Yeah. And instead of like a session on food and beverage and what you need to know, collecting information from attendees and then having like a luncheon and actually letting them experience what it's like to see the labeling, what it's like to sit and have your preferences met. You don't have that be with a speaker piece of it, but not with slides and with, I'm supposed to write this all down and now I got to go picture what this looks like. But the actual experience of what that is like, if you were the attendee, what would it be like to experience something like that? And I mean, obviously that can be applied to 1,000 topics.
Yeah, it's interesting. I went on this trip to Italy and we went on doing things like truffle hunting and tasting wines and picking olives. And I can imagine if we could have had conversations that were guided in those experiences to attach to them, because I will never forget truffle hunting, but I don't have any specific conversation tied to it where I learned anything except this is kind of cool. I didn't know this is where truffles are. You know, I met some interesting people along the way. So it seems to me another thing in strategy that is sometimes missing is we plan events for ourselves instead of for the client and understanding who the avatar is. I don't know if is that true for some of the people that you're serving, that they think they know who they're serving, but they don't really?
Absolutely. You know, it's just that I think we all have that tendency to think this is what I would want. So let's do it. And it would work, you know, and not enough time about really asking your people, is this something you'd want? That's kind of what I like about the client that I was talking about earlier, where they did the testing and they really didn't get great feedback. And it was sad, but at the same time, we otherwise, you know, we thought it was a great idea. There were several of us who were like, you know, from the client team and from our side, and we worked on it and we messed with the messaging and stuff. And we, even when they sent out the first communication, it really didn't get much interest. So we're like, okay, it could be this, it could be that, it could be this. So we changed the messaging, we sent it out again, you know, that kind of thing. It's annoying, but it saved them thousands and thousands of dollars in time. And like I said, maybe that's something that they then can do in a year or two, and they can work between now and then to kind of build up the appetite for something like that. Because a lot of it is not necessarily that the idea doesn't work or that it wasn't good, but it's, are you reaching the right people? Was the messaging at the right time? Was it too specific? And so they didn't like this part of the idea, so they weren't interested. Or was it too vague? They want to know exactly what they're doing, you know. So really feeling out all those different things gives us time to do that. But then for the sake of the client, it's, I think, so much smarter to figure that out. And you only get that if you're actually talking and knowing your audience.
Yeah, it takes conversation and studying the data if you have the data. And that data may only come through those focus groups and surveys that you do. But you got to know your data. Otherwise, you are designing the event for yourself. And that's, to me, that's the biggest temptation we have to resist as event organizers is, you know, if you plan the event for yourself, you might enjoy yourself, but everyone else is going to walk away complaining about the things that you thought were great.
Yeah, we've made that experience, you know, that mistake before, where we're saying like to the client, this is what people want. And it was stuff I was hearing in the industry. It was things I thought that makes a lot of sense. And in the feedback, people are like, too much fun, not enough content. I'm like, whoa, you know, like, great to know. But I realized over time that it is a very audience thing. Like, some audiences come for, they want to go away with takeaways, you know? And we found with that particular client, they want takeaways. But then if you say like, what did you learn? They can't spit it back out. They were having a really hard time saying what they actually learned. So we started creating like literal takeaways. After every session, we would take 5 minutes and say, what did you all learn? And we'd write it on these big post-its, like super archaic. It was killing me, but we did it. Put it on the walls and everyone was taking pictures. And that got the best feedback out of all the events we've done for them because they just needed someone to guide them. It's kind of like, you know, with the relationships and the conversation, like you were talking with the truffle hunting. It's like people don't even know how to have a conversation anymore. They're like with someone, it's awkward. You're not sure if you're supposed to say something. You're supposed to talk. What are you supposed to talk about? I feel like those guiding things are really important these days because otherwise, you know, they might leave saying, this was a horrible event. I didn't learn anything. And you're like, yes, you did. You just didn't write it down. You're supposed to like implement it. So yeah, I think it's been an interesting learning experience for me. Every group wants something so different. And you really have to know what that is.
And I think to that point, you've got to also help speakers, if the event has speakers, understand the uniqueness of the audience. Otherwise, they might come and deliver the talk they always give and miss the mark. Absolutely. And I've seen that happen, and I'm sure you have too.
Yeah, absolutely. We're always kind of saying like, this is what they love. This is, you know, how much we want the theme tied in. This is what your takeaways should look like. Like literally some of our sessions, we actually ask the speakers to have 3 things that you say at the end that are the 3 things you want them to do from here on out, like action steps. You know, this client, their audience needs that. You know, this other client, they want the inspirational. They want just make them feel good. They don't really care if there's a set takeaway. They'll love it as long as their heart feels lifted and they feel like it was fun. So we kind of try to give that coaching to the speakers. On the speaker side, some are great at receiving that feedback and going with whatever we tell them. And some you're like, I told you not to do that, you know, but that's always the speaker thing. Yeah.
Well, and those typically are the speakers that don't get great reviews unless they're a pro and they're going to get great reviews no matter what they do. If they don't pay attention. So, Beth, one of the things I know you do is you get on calls with those speakers if the client's not already doing it. Because the client sometimes says that. So, and I think that's a really smart success factor is you've set those speakers up for success in your communication.
Yeah. I think in the past year or two, we've even just started doing calls with all the speakers, even if the client's doing it, because we often find there's a disconnect between what the client wants and what they're telling the speakers that they want. So we kind of come in, even if it's a 5-minute thing, and say, hey, just to make sure, this is what we need. And this is what's going to get you the best return. You know, they're going to love you and ask you to come back time and time again if you can do these 2 things. And that's probably not what our client said to them. So we've realized the importance. And we've really kind of gotten involved in even the content because we find our clients are moving so fast. And they're like, we want this person to speak and this person to speak. And you're like, great. What are they speaking about? You know, why? Yeah. And so we often have to do more of that digging and like look at the speakers and think about the audience and make those connections. We actually have been more in recommending the full agenda to our clients. They just hand us like 15 speakers and we say, this one makes sense over here. And then this one's got to go here. And these are the topics and this is the description. And they're just kind of okaying it because they don't really take the time to think about, you know, what's going to resonate. They don't think about storyline. They're just like, this guy's available on Tuesday. Can he speak on Tuesday? You're like, that makes no sense from an attendee perspective. So really getting involved at that level, that's pretty much like our standard at this point, just because we care about those things and we have the time, we make the time to think about them. Whereas clients don't always have the vision to do that, you know?
So you're describing someone who has to know a whole lot more than being able to operate a checklist. You've got to be able to do strategy. You've got to be able to do content planning. You've got to be able to do community building. You need to know virtual, hybrid, in person. You need to be able to help them create follow-up plans and operate a budget. It's a lot more than just being able to execute a plan that somebody gives you. And I think that's the modern event organizers. We've got to be much more strategic. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I think that that's one of the benefits of being an independent business owner myself is that I know what it's been like to try things and not be successful and what works and what doesn't for my business. And those give me ideas on things that our clients should be looking out for. So I think we will see more event professionals being independent. That's kind of one thought. And the other one is that those components that you're talking about, I think, are what make us irreplaceable to things like AI that everyone seems so scared about. If all you do is review contracts and follow timelines, you can be replaced by an AI agent. But what we're talking about in this call is not at all replaceable by AI now or 10 years from now. And so I think planners have to really be thinking about how they can sit in more of that advisory strategy role to stay relevant, you know, with this ridiculous AI wave that's taking us over.
Yeah, and AI could probably help you brainstorm some of the things that you're thinking about, but it's still going to be human-led. It's not going to be able to think the way that you're thinking or create those experiences. But, you know, you could say, this is the problem that I've got, and you could talk it out with AI. What are 10 ideas? And then you could refine three of them and present them to the client. That's totally legitimate. It's a great use of AI. It's your brainstorming partner, but it can't make the decisions for you.
Yeah.
So this has been an awesome conversation, Liz. I've loved it. I'd like to move, if we can, to the saxophonic ending, or as I call it, the signature sign-off, and then we'll get your details. So I always ask for three words. If possible, make one of them emotional. And these are words that stand out from the conversation that we've had today.
Community, for sure. Technology, I think, is always a piece of what I have in there. And is strategy too scientific of a word? Too scientific?
Not at all. Because I know that you're a singer.
Oh, no.
What does technology sound like to you? What would that, is that like a robotic sound?
Yeah, I guess that's where my brain goes. Kind of robotic. Okay.
And you're a musician, so I want you to give me a key. What key should this be in?
How about E?
E. Oh, goodness. Okay. We can do it.
Throw you
I'm going to go to E minor.
Okay, there you go. Amazing how you do that.
I don't know if it reflected those words, but had a little bit of fun there. Liz, thank you again for being on the show. How can people find you, follow you online?
TexiTalk.com is probably the easiest way. I am on LinkedIn and, you know, all the social channels, but the website probably has the most interesting information, and then we'll lead you all the other places as well.
Fantastic. Well, Liz, it's been great having you on the show. Folks, make sure you go follow Liz. She's doing amazing things, and she may be able to help you with your event. And let's go change the world one event at a time. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Event Innovator Show. Connect with Phil on philmachon.com, and be sure to subscribe and never miss an episode.